Okay, I call to order the House Committee on Education for Monday, April 6, 2015. And welcome everybody here. We're going to have a few little changes in the agenda, and we'll address those when we get here. There will not be a work session on House Bill 3375, and it will be rescheduled at a later date. Okay, so with that, we are going to open up a public... Is everyone here for 3499? Pardon? Okay, so we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3499. Richard, if you could read the summary, please.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3499 does a number of things related to English language learner programs, ELL programs. The committee's been asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments, which replace the measure. The committee just received the Dash 1, so actually on the dais is a full copy of the Dash 1s, and there's an updated SMS on the dais as well. The Dash 1s replace the measure. They establish an advisory group to develop uniform budgeting and coding standards and reporting requirements. It establishes a work group to determine best practices. It sunsets both of those groups. It requires annual reports relating to ELL expenditures and outcomes related to kind of a similar in theme to Representative Wisnett's HB 2967. It also updates the definition of ELL, changes the existing name of ESL to ELL, directs the Department of Education to identify schools, districts as low performing and in need of targeted assistance for ELL learners, and it declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015.
Okay, thank you. Who do we have for this bill? Cindy Hunt from ODE.
3499. Which one? 3499. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Hunt. I'm the Government Legal Affairs Manager for the Oregon Department of Education. And I was asked to come in here today and I think talk to you about two things regarding the amendments. I had spoken to you last week in kind of a high level about what the amendments would do, so now you have them in front of you. So talk to you a little bit about what they actually do, and then also about the timeline regarding all of these moving pieces and so forth. So regarding the amendments, so actually, I'm going to go over the timeline first because I think that would provide a nice outline. So as soon as this bill were signed, so it has an emergency clause of July 1, the department would convene two work groups. So the first of these work groups is going to be on uniform budget and accounting. And this is how districts report to us how they're expending these dollars that they're getting for ELL services. But it's also on what constitute English language learner services as well. And there's some discussion about what that means. So this work group would be temporary in nature, but it would be meeting through the summer. And it would probably have folks on it, you know, think budget people, some ELL people, some Department of Ed staff, that kind of thing. And so then they would specifically make recommendations about this uniform reporting to the State Board of Education, who would then look at this and adopt it by rule. And then the districts would be reporting to us on this uniform budget and accounting system in the summer of 2016 and beyond. So then the next thing that would happen simultaneously with this work group would be another work group. And this work group is going to last a bit longer. And the work group is going to do things like the criteria for determining the districts that are going to be identified as low performing, the technical assistance that the department is going to provide to the districts, the information that the districts are going to include in their annual reports of outcomes for ELL students. Also on a variety of other things like guidelines for how the department is going to, if these districts are low performing for 4 years, you remember last week I talked about at that point the department could step in and direct these districts about how to spend that extra 0.5 weight, you know, that's out of the state school fund. So it's this advisory group that would be advising the department of what does that look like as well. And also what's been added is also the work group would be studying and making recommendations about other supports to students who are no longer eligible for ELL services and some other items and making a report back to the legislature. So the timeline, though, for the work group would be making recommendations to the state board for rule adoption. in the fall and into the winter. And then the first school districts to be identified as low performing for English language learners would likely be in the summer of 2016. And one of the nice things about that timing is that you've heard my colleague Lisa Harlan from the department talk to you about the Focus and Priority School program, perhaps. And so that's a program under the federal law, the Elementary Education Secondary Act, where we name a certain number of schools in the state. These are the lowest performing schools, and they're also in areas of high poverty. And they've been named for 4 years. So we're 3 years into that right now. So in summer 2016, we're going to name new schools under that program. So by aligning the timing of that with the timing of naming these schools under these districts under the ELL program, we believe some will be named as both. And some won't be, but we'll be able to leverage federal resources. Mm-hmm. Because what will happen is, under the Focus and Priority School model, these schools come up with plans and they have coaches and so forth. Under this model, it's similar, but focused on ELL students. So those will be coordinated, right? So the timing on that actually couldn't be more perfect, to be honest. So that's what's happening in the summer of 2016. So then the school districts would enter into their planning phases. They'd be developing plans. How are they going to address, you know, increasing achievement for ELL students? What kind of projects? Those kinds of things. Then the first reports would come in from the districts. So these are the districts, like all of the districts, in September of 2016. About how are they expending their ELL resources and those kinds of things. And so that information would then feed into the school improvement work. So for example, if you have a district out here who has really good achievement results for its ELL students, and we look at how they're expending money, and it's like, oh, that's interesting. You know, they're expending it more on, you know, targeted resources and personnel or something than technology. So then we would be sharing that kind of best practice information back to the low-performing schools and districts. So that's kind of how that would work in a kind of a feedback loop. But now the amendments. Does anyone have questions about the timeline? It's a little complicated because there's a lot of moving pieces. But
any questions? Representative
before I get
McClain.
Into the...
The timeline, I mean, you're right. There was like four layers there.
Yeah.
The layer that sounded like it might work out would be the federal schools that are having issues and are on that list that's already been made. And so I get that, how that's going to work. But I guess the basic, because it deals with a timeline, you've got $12.5 million. And that $12.5 million we've said are going back to the schools. And so is the department using their budget to basically take care of the two task forces so that the resources, the 12.5, really are going to go for the support for ELL students and their schools?
Yeah, Chair Doherty, Representative McClain, thank you for that question. So everyone knows, you know, it's $12.5 million associated with the bill. Someone's asked me, what's the fiscal on the bill? Well, $12.5 million. They didn't get the joke, that always means. But no, the $10 million was built around the school improvement program. And literally, when we came up with that number, we took, okay, there's probably going to be 32 schools, and these are the kinds of supports that we've given, like our focus and priority schools, and we multiplied it out. And so that's how we came up with the $10 million. Also within the $10 million was the... somewhat the administration for the advisory groups. But when I say that, there's existing Oregon Department of Education staff that are going to be involved in these advisory groups, and so the cost of their salaries aren't within the $12.5 million. So by way of example, we have someone who manages our uniform budget and accounting system currently. I would imagine they are going to be very involved in this work group. Mm-hmm. I would imagine I'm going to be involved at some level. So that's not, you know, included. So that's the $10 million, and then the $2.5 million, $2 million of that was for rolling out the state ELL plan. And this is a strategic plan on how to improve outcomes for all English language learners in the state. It discusses things like, not discusses, it identifies, like, for example, doing additional professional development for English language learner teachers and a variety of other things. I can more than happy to get you lots of details on that. So that was $2 million. Mm-hmm. And then the $500,000, the $500,000, was for roughly two additional education specialists specialists who would be specialists on English language learners. Those individuals would be working with those targeted districts that have the schools, you know, that are low performing. So there's roughly 32, 33 of those. Mm-hmm. And we came up with that staffing based on the focus and priority model is how that works.
Yeah. Okay. So at the end of the day, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, there's $10 million that still can be used in about 12 months because of the third segment. I mean, they're not going to get it in the first year of the biennium. So it would be in the second year of the biennium. There will be enough work done in that description of those three layers that you had that we might have the ability to give money back in support to the districts.
Yes. So, Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, when you say, so part of it will be money, but part of it will be resources. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't want to get ahead of this, too, because if I say, you know, here's all the details, it's kind of getting ahead of the advisory group, right? But with the focus and priority school model, for example, we hire coaches. And these coaches go into each individual school and mentor them. So that would be an example of a service we would provide as opposed to money, mm-hmm. you know. So yes, so those resources would go out to these schools and districts. And then also there's the targeted schools. So before when I was in here, I talked about how there's the low-performing schools, and those are kind of the lowest. And then there's the targeted, you know, ones who are a little bit higher that just need additional assistance and targeting and so forth. So that $10 million is covering both of those groups.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I'm happy to come back to the committee or actually send you a written documentation about how we actually did our math. We can show our math.
Okay, yeah. Fine, thank you. So you have more or?
If the committee would like me to go through the Dash 1 amendments, I'm happy to do that. I think it's largely what you had seen sort of before described in that. But, yeah, I'm happy to do that as well. But I know that this bill is going to come back in front of you at a later date.
Okay. Would you guys like to hear the explanation of the Dash 1s or wait?
I just have one question.
Okay. Wait.
Yeah. Okay, we'll wait. I have one question.
Representative Reardon.
Could you talk to me a little bit about how you identify the low-performing outcomes and how does that process work?
Yeah. Representative Reardon, Chair Doherty, the advisory group would be coming up with methods for identification. It would likely be a variety of methods. For example, the Smarter Balanced Assessment at this point would be we would have 2 years of data. But it would not just be, for example, so with our focus and priority schools, we look at not just their level of achievement, but if they're improving. So is there growth? It would be other factors, though, too, like, you know, is this a district that has a large number of kids in poverty, for example? One of the issues that we would discuss with the advisory group would be, okay, so we have two districts with two schools. In District A has 50 students, and they're doing not so good. District B has 500 students, and they're doing a little bit better than District A, but we can only do one. Which one would you like, advisory board? So it's things like that that we're going to be discussing. So it's not just purely based on achievement, but it's also on, you know, where do we put our resources as a state? And we also will have other assessment methods such as ELPA 21 at that point as well, which assesses students in Spanish as well for how well they're doing. So.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and there will be Dash 2s for this. I think there are going to be some Dash 2 amendments.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think I heard from the organizer of the coalition that's working on this bill, and I think they expect Dash 2s that will be very similar in substance to the Dash 1s, but kind of refined for wording. So
okay.
The Dash 1s are basically there, but yeah. The number will be different when the actual amendment comes through.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just a couple of clarifying questions, and somebody may have already asked this, and I apologize, I may have missed it. The $12.5 million is all that's accounted for in this. There is no additional dollars. It's just the money that's in the state school fund, the $12.5 million.
Back, Chair Doherty, the cost of the new programs and so forth that are created in here is $12.5 million. However,
The bill also does mention the half weight out of the state school fund. So if a school is in improvement for 4 years or more, it directs that the Department of Education can then direct that district on how to spend the money associated with that half weight. So that half weight, that's like, I'm sorry, I don't have the number off the top of my head about how much is associated with that statewide, but it's more than $12.5 million. But that's not additional monies going into the state school fund. It's directing dollars on how they're spent. Also, the bill, no, or rather under the amendments, the school funding formula is not changed other than to change the terminology from English as a second language to English language learners, which is the more updated term. So you will see some of the state school fund statutes in here, but it's just the change of terminology. Follow up.
Please.
Thank you. So again, the 12.5 is designated toward English language learners. The half weight we know is also given for English language learners. So this group is going to take state funded dollars that are mandated to school districts, and they will decide how districts are going to manage those dollars based on the rules that they will put into place themselves. Can you explain to us who exactly is on this panel?
Yeah. So Chair Doherty, Representative Heck. Yeah, no, totally. So the way that the bill is worded is that we are to convene a work group that will have, must consist of educators, parents, and community stakeholders. So one of the questions that came up in the work group that's been working on this is, what do you mean by community stakeholders? I was reading that as very broadly. For example, does that include the Oregon School Boards Association? Yes, you know, representatives from COSA OEA, those kinds of groups. But also groups such as OPANA or communities of color would also be included in that. It would be very inclusive, right? Also Department of Education staff. They would be coming up with recommendations about what to put in rules for the State Board of Education. So this would go through a normal rulemaking process as well. And so what that involves is that there is notice that is put out to stakeholders, again, on the Department of Education's website. Each of you gets rulemaking notices from us, I think, sometimes. You probably get tired of seeing those sometimes because we send so many. But each of you get those as legislators. That's required. And so they would go through that public comment process, and there would also be what we call a rule hearing on them. And then they go to the State Board of Education, who meets in public, and they make decisions in public. And so that's when the rules would be adopted. So there's a couple of steps in there that would take place.
Okay. Another one. Yeah. So
follow up, Representative.
Thank you. I might have a couple. Can you tell me who in ODE will be assigning the stakeholders, educators, and parents?
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, I believe ultimately the decision would rest with the deputy superintendent. And so what we normally do with work groups is that our staff will be identifying folks, but ultimately that would be the decision maker. So, for example, if I'm creating a work group of this nature, you know, I would come up with a list of folks. I would be, you know, consulting with, you know, I would probably start with the people who have been working on this project for the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. Also be consulting with groups of stakeholders to see if they have a recommended person. But ultimately, you know, the staff would make a recommendation. This is who we think it should be, and this is who they represent. And then the deputy superintendent would be reviewing that.
Do you know the number of folks that will be involved? Have they set a number?
No.
Will the dash 2 include the number of how many will be on the...
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, I'm not sure if the dash 2 will include a number specifically. There's been some discussion about how big should the work group be. Most of our work groups range from, oh boy, this is a wide range, but between 10 and 20. Mm-hmm. Because if you get very much bigger than that, they're really kind of unworkable.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson, then Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cindy, The authors of this bill obviously perceived that there was a problem somewhere, and this bill is supposedly the remedy to that problem. Could you give me somewhat of a concise statement about, from your perception, what problem this bill was designed to take care of?
Yeah, Representative Wilson, I mean, in a nutshell, I think all of you heard Deputy Superintendent Saxton speak to this last week, is that we have a very large number of English language learners in this state, something like 55,000, and that number is growing each year. We know that. We also know that we have some districts who They're English language learners. While the population is growing in these districts, the achievement is not. So there is an achievement gap between English language learners and other students. So as the ELL population goes up and up and up, it affects our overall graduation rates, our overall achievement as a state. And so that's roughly the problem. But there's also recognition that there's a limited number of resources, you know, to throw at this, right? And so what the bill is attempting to do is say, okay, we're going to take this targeted amount of money, $12.5 million, and we are going to target these 32, you know, schools, roughly, with this money, with coaches, and also off of the experience of our Focus and Priority program and, you know, those lessons learned, and we're going to take that and we're going to target these districts and these schools and move the dial. So that's roughly, it's around achievement of ELLs, but also a growing population as well. So it's both. Okay. Yeah.
Quick follow-up. And what determined, again, the 32 schools chosen?
Yeah. So Chair Doherty, Representative Wilson, it'll be the advisory group and how they're coming up with the list. When we did the fiscal and how much money was needed, we came up with that number, looking at, you know, things like the current data, if we are going to impact, you know, the most number possible of, you know, ELLs for this amount of money and that kind of thing. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, Representative McLean. The question that I have after hearing the dialogue with the last set of questions was that when it was described by the Deputy Superintendent, my feeling was that what I heard both in my office and out here was that the money was going to be used for services and or you know, funds, and that it would be provided district by district, and that district by district would have an opportunity to work with the Department of Ed so that they could figure out what would be the most expedient and the best support for their district. And that's not what I heard today.
So, Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, there's been different versions of this as well. And so, you know, there's been versions out there that said things like that students can only stay in these programs 4 and 7 years and that we are going to impact, you know, the way the state school fund, you know, was distributed and that kind of thing. Those ideas are not in these amendments. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's probably a fair amount of confusion out there, is because these things have morphed over the course of several months. But district by district, part of what we do with the Focus and Priority program is we work with the districts to identify ways that they can refocus services and attention to the schools to improve. And so when we talk about, you know, it's not exactly a one-size-fits-all because we are a local control state, right? But, you know, with that program, we have been able to look at it and go, you know, if you spend money here, you're going to get better results. We know this because your colleagues did, you know? And it's that kind of a sharing that we play the role of. And so I would anticipate that under this, there would be more of that. You know, I mean, the best example from this past year that I can think of is that I think the legislature gave for the Focus of Priority Schools something like $40,000. There was more than that, but there was a specific pot of money to improve reading scores, right? And so they were allowed to spend the money on educator, coaches, and technology. And so different schools did different things, and that was allowable. But then we looked at the data, and we said, oh, look at this. You know, the folks who spent it on getting the reading coaches in and training the teachers, their numbers went up, you know, their achievement scores. The districts that spent it on technology, not a bad expenditure, but their achievement did not go up. It's sharing out of things like that, that if you're so focused at the local level, you know, that you don't necessarily even know. You're trying to spend the money in the best way you can, but you don't realize that, oh, by the way, if you had spent it in this way, you'd see a better achievement. So that's part of this. Yeah.
Okay. I'll wait.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay.
Okay. No, I guess.
Representative,
I'm not sure if it was this bill or some other one where we actually focused on when students leave ELL programs. Part of this discussion?
Yeah. Chair Doherty, Representative Reardon, it was originally part of this bill that we were focusing. That's the 4 and the 7 years that I referred to. But where that discussion is sort of embedded in this bill is around the targeted schools specifically and looking at numbers of kids and, you know, how they exit and when they exit and if they exit when they should. And so you had asked me earlier, you know, how would the advisory group, what factors would they use to determine if, you know, a school becomes targeted versus, you know, not? That could be one of those factors that they look at. So it's not just achievement, it's how long are they keeping the kids in these programs.
And so that could be part of the
The
task force.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, any other? Because I know that this is not the only, this $12 million is not the only EEL money. We've got other pots, so.
I want to make one statement because Cindy, you're the one that's going to go back and hopefully, and the folks in the back of the room impact what happens with all this legislation. But the basic thing is that every single one of the school districts have a different population of folks. They came at a different time. They've been there, you know, some come from Ecuador, some come from Mexico, some come from, you know, Cosa Nova, wherever. But I mean, the whole idea is that we've got to be able to allow the folks that are actually working with the kids in their population have as much opportunity to put fingerprints on this as possible. Mm-hmm. So this is not a one-way dialogue. This is a two-way dialogue. And it's got to really impact the kids that are in the classroom and the teachers that are with them. Mm-hmm. So the more money we can get down there, it's nice to have two more people at the Department of Ed, but quite frankly, we need more people down there working with the kids in the classroom. We all know that. Mm-hmm. So we understand that people can put together data and put together information and come up with some good strategies and also look at, you know, what seems to be working and what doesn't. But again, you don't have a single face in front of you. And the teachers in those classrooms really do. So I'm just hoping that we can get the money down to where we really need to have it go.
Okay, thank you. Representative Brito.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, you said there is 55,000 ELL learners right now and growing. I talked to Jim Green a couple months ago, and he said in the last 10 years, the number has doubled in the Salem-Keizer School District from 20% to 40% of Hispanic. I mean, probably not all those are ELL. So is this a kind of a long-term strategy to take into account this and to see if this is the best policy that we can come up with as far as affecting the rest of education while we're trying to teach these kids to speak the language?
Yeah, Chair Doherty, Representative Barreto, you're correct. It is a long-term strategy. This is not a, you know, 1 year and we get it done. These schools will be identified as such for 4 years. And that is like the focus and priority school model. And the reason is, it's like, you know, when you start doing good practices, if you do them for a week, but if you start doing them, you know, year after year, you're more likely to continue once you're outside of being designated as such, right? So it is a long-term strategy. And I'm sure Jim is very correct on those numbers regarding Salem-Keizer. One of the things that I think some people are surprised to hear is that the district with the most English language learners in this state right now is Salem-Keizer. Mm-hmm. Number two is Beaverton. Number three is Portland. They also happen to be our three largest districts, mm-hmm. but, you know, sometimes the order surprises you. Mm-hmm. And if you were to look at, you know, Salem-Keizer English language learners versus Beaverton, there's going to be some similarities to some groups, but there's other groups that there isn't a similarity because Beaverton has Nike and Intel and so forth. So their English language learners sometimes look a little different than the ones in Salem-Keizer, which tend to be more in poverty and those kinds of things. But yeah, that increase, I'm sure Jim is spot on with his numbers regarding Salem-Keizer.
Okay, thank you.
Is that the increase that we're looking for? Is this doubling every 10 years?
Let me get back to you on that. I'm not sure if every district has doubled every 10 years because I know the growth in English language learners in Salem-Keizer in particular has grown. So I'm not sure that I would make that statement for the entire state right now, but I can get back to you with those numbers.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, Cindy, thank you very much. That's the only person I had signed up for $34.99, and as they say, we'll bring this up again because we think we're going to have dash twos coming in. So anybody else? Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3499 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2150. Richard?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2150 requires district extended ADMW to be calculated by considering students in public charter schools to be students in non-charter public schools. The superintendent of public instruction to withhold payments from the state school fund for amounts the school district had received when extended ADMW for students in public charter schools and students in non-charter public schools were calculated separately. The committee's been asked to consider the dash 5 amendments, which do all everything that I just mentioned, but also say that for the 2015-16 school year, this year upcoming, it will allow the inclusion of 8% of ADMW calculated by inclusion of students at a public charter school that has ceased operation due to termination, school closure, or non-renewal of a charter school. So that 8% would be included in the ADMW calculation. After the 2015-16 school year, that number would go to 5%. So that would be ADMW would be calculated by inclusion of 5% of students for a charter school that is closed.
Okay. I'm going to call up Jan McComb, Michael Elliott, and Gary Temple, if you guys come up, to talk about the system that we went through to get to the dash, whatever we are at now, the dash fives, because we did all get together and in a room and try to work out some of the situations that we had with the SIO transfer and then looking down. And then we will have Laurie Andrews and Ron Talbot from our Far East. Thank you. So, Jan, if you want to start.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb with the Department of Education, and with me is Michael Elliott, the State School Fund Coordinator. As Chair Doherty alluded to, as you might remember, the first bill took care of one issue that was raised about double counting students, but it didn't really address the issue of when a big virtual charter school moved to another school district. And so the Dash 5 amendment seeks to deal with that particular issue. Because of extended ADMW, where a school district can count the larger of this year's enrollment or the prior year's enrollment, there's a situation where SIO, for example, if they are going to lose 4,000 students, it would be natural that they would count the prior year. Sandy M. Canyon District that's getting the 4,000 students, they would count the current year. And so you're double counting 4,000 students, which equals to about $27 million, which is a significant impact on the state school fund. In the first version of this bill, the idea was to just not let them count that, not let the sponsoring district who's being left count those students. But the sponsoring school districts made a pretty good case that they still had costs in terms of wrapping up and closing out the school. And so the Dash 4 amendment was going to allow the school district that's being left to keep 5% of that extended ADMW. We talked to Superintendent Temple, who identified costs that were greater than 5%. And so the Dash 5 amendments, I should back up and say the 5% was arrived at by our charter school staff calling other school districts and asking them, when you had a school leave you, about how much did that cost? And the range was between like 3 and 8%, and that's how we got to 5. So after meeting with Superintendent Temple, we arrived at the Dash 5 amendments, which say for the next year, it'll be 8% that the district being left gets to keep, and then it'll go back down to 5%. We think this is an unusual situation because of the size of SIO. And we will continue to work with Superintendent Temple on closing out SIO. He faces a lot of challenges.
Okay. Are you here for questions, or are you speaking, Mr. Elliott?
Chair Doherty, Michael Elliott, State School Fund Coordinator. I'm really here for questions at this point.
Mr. Temple?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Gary Temple, Superintendent of the School District. First, let me express my appreciation to all of you. Many of you spent several hours in a room with me as we worked through this, and that was way beyond the call of duty, and I certainly appreciate that. Probably the first thing we need to remember is this bill will create a new system next year. So in the past, what you would know as hold harmless went to districts as 100%. And this will change that so that, in the past, what we've had is small school or small charter schools close, and that's caused a ripple in the school fund. In this case, it's going to cause a wake. And so we were committed from the beginning to help you find a solution to prevent that from happening, because that's a huge deal. But because this is new, and this is, we're not the only district that will be in this situation this year, and many districts won't even know this probably yet for another month or so if this works its way through the legislature. What we've asked is that for the first year it be 8%, so that's down from 100, 92% to 8%, and then after that it'd be 5%. In the past, there, and I would have told you that I would have never realized that there would have been costs to closing a charter school. My assumption would have been they went away, we get back to zero, everything's good to go. Might be unique to the situation that we're in, but I think we will survive with that. I really need to have third grade next year. That is my goal. And so I think with the department's help, we can make it and we can get to where we need to be. So I'll leave it with that.
Thank you. Any questions of this panel? Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you for being here. In the wrapping up and closing up of the school, was that not something that was discussed as part of the contract? Was that not something that you did any due diligence in checking out so that you could have some fiduciary forethought in planning? And what are those things that you have to do? And what is the cost?
So, Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, we're looking at... So never in the 10 years that we've been involved in charter schools. So I've been involved in both the charter part of it at workshops. I've been part of it in the sponsorship part. I can tell you that we've never had a discussion about what do you do as far as costs go when a charter school closes. No one has ever mentioned you better be putting some money away for when they close. That will now be part of our discussions as we talk with authorizers, that part of what they need to do is hold back money so they're prepared for that. In our case, we potentially have some pretty huge unemployment costs because we write all the IEPs for the students, and so all those people, nine of them, will be laid off at the end of the year. What we've learned is we will have 77 years worth of record storage. And those will all be kept in fireproof cabinets in a climate-controlled room. We're going to have some organization costs to make sure that we can get to those records because we're not going to have people in the future that can go pull those as needed. We still need to pay districts. Lots of little nuts and bolts. We're going to have to mail records. There will be several things that we'll have to do. And I don't know. I'm hopeful with the department's help that we'll be able to... control some of the costs as that happens. If not, then we will have to take other steps in order to cover that, because whatever happens for the next 77 years, we have to write the check.
Follow up. Okay. Thank you. So none of the dollars that your district gained during the 10 years that you had these contracts, did you put anything away in any forethought whatsoever for any type of storage for records or anything?
So not for the regular students, no. We do have approximately 30 fireproof cabinets that will keep this special ed records in. We incorporated the money into our budget, and we spent it on teachers, and we put it in salaries like our people expected us to. And during the downturn, it didn't make sense for us to cut days if we could incorporate that into our budget and keep school going the full time.
Okay, just one more question. Can you tell us how much, what the percentage was that you were getting when you had the contract?
So we get approximately 3.78%, and we figure our net was about 2% that we were able to incorporate back into the budget.
So if we're at 8% now, that's a rather large increase from what you were getting before. So we're in a tough crunch right now with the state school fund. So I just have a really hard time saying we're going to take 8% and give you more dollars than what you were even getting before.
So remember, there are closure costs here. But probably the best analogy I can give you is the state school fund is a revenue formula. So the best analogy I've ever heard is it's a pool. And in the past, whatever happened, if students left the district, whatever, one time you would refill the pool back to the top. And then we were expected to dip our expenses out of that. In this case, our pool will be way less than half and you're going to put a little bit back. You're not filling it to the top like you used to. And we're going to be expected to dip our expenses out of that as they come.
I would disagree with that, and especially when we're at 8% and you were at 2 point, whatever it was, and you're going to get those full numbers. We're not decreasing the numbers that you're getting, and you're getting a higher percentage. I would have to disagree with that.
Could you explain the numbers of what?
He's getting 8%. We're going to 8%, and he was getting
for one year.
Mm-hmm. And then you're going to 5, which is still more.
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, I think there may be two different numbers going on here.
Okay. Yeah.
So he was getting 3.78% off of every individual weight that was kept at his district that enrolled in ORCA. The 8% that's being discussed in the Dash 5 amendments is 8% of the total ADMW that will be counted. So instead of, I think it's like 3,900, it will be, you know, about 175 to 200 weights. And then it'll be the full amount of that weight will be kept, as opposed to if 2150 doesn't exist, then he would get the full weight of the full 3,900 students.
But if you do the math of what he had, he's getting more money than he got before. I did the math.
Okay.
I mean, you could do tell. I mean, you are the professional in that regard. But I did the math, and they are getting more money than they got before than what they had in their contract.
And again, that has to
based on the numbers.
That has to do with the costs that we're having to cover. But there's not 2 years worth of money, so it's not 8% and 5%.
I know.
There's 1 year worth of money. So okay.
Still more money.
Sorry, I was confused. Thank you.
We can talk about what went on in the committees and what some of the costs are and so on and so forth. So, anyway, any other questions?
That's my opinion.
Representative Bretto.
Yeah, thank you. I think you said 4,000 students. It was $21 million?
27. I'm sorry. Chair Doherty, Representative Bretto. $27
million? Oh, 27. Okay. So then the 8% then, is that 8% of the $27
million? Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. And then the other two other people we have, and this is dealing with one of the clauses in the bill, Lori Andrews and Ron Talbot from Burnt River Charter and Harper.
Yes.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Came a long way.
I thought
we
did.
Yep. Okay. Whoever wants to start, and make sure before you speak, identify yourself for the record.
Okay. I'll start.
Okay.
Chair Doherty, committee members, excuse me, for the record, my name is Lori Andrews, and I'm the superintendent of Burnt River Charter School in Unity, Oregon. And I'm here to testify against House Bill 2150 or a specific clause in it that allows ODE to ask for repayment. Burnt River is a small rural school located in a ranching community in eastern Oregon. As a result of House Bill 3417 passed in 2011, thank you, it changed the way that the ADMW was calculated, and we received additional funds from the state school fund. These funds were used to develop an agriculture program and hire an agriculture teacher. We've also been able to expand our science program, particularly our plant science program. And we've strived to provide career and technical education for our students, as well as college credits. If this bill goes forth in the present state and ODE is allowed to withhold these funds, it will have a devastating impact on our students directly, our school, and our community.
Okay. And if I can ask you, do you guys have what the specific clause of that was? Or can we get that from OSBA? We'll get it later. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay. The specific clause or the amount?
In the bill.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll look while we're on.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Doherty and committee members, my name is, for the record, my name is Ron Talbot, and I'm the superintendent at Harper Charter School. And where is Harper Charter School located? I am 45 miles east of Ontario, Oregon, or 23 miles east of Vail, Oregon, if you've heard of those schools. So,
and right, he's not in Idaho.
Not to Idaho.
Could
yet.
Throw a rock into Idaho.
Nope.
I felt impressed to travel over to share my concerns about House Bill 2150 and the repayment, to kind of echo Lori's comments from Burnt River. In 2012, we received some additional funding through the charter school, ADMW, and at the time, in 2011, we established our charter school. We had approximately 60 students in the charter school, and the following year, in 2012, our enrollment jumped to 75 students, and today it's at 102 students. So we've had some good exponential growth there in our charter school, but in the 2012 school year, that additional funding was a blessing to our students, as we were able to add additional electives. We have the breakdown of our charter school. It's a K-12-1 school building, and the breakdown is approximately 40 K through 6 students, 20 junior high students, 7-8, and approximately 41 high school students currently. We were able to add additional electives there that, for one, are we built a 1,200 cubic foot science room, in which we had no lab facilities for our students at all at the school for science, and now we have a facility that's being finished at the time right now that is actually providing the lab facilities and ability for us to teach those students, giving them the opportunity to have the science facilities. We had no lab tables before, just a one sink in a schoolroom. Now we have a six-tabled, fully furnished science lab for those 40 students. And to be honest with you, the repayment of the House bill, if that were to go forth, it could damage what we worked so hard as a small charter school to establish. We also have added additional auto classes, 3 auto mechanics classes for our students that have been great, and 2 woodshop classes through registered teachers in the registry, charter registry, which has been just additional electives for our students to be able to take advantage of. And then the increased enrollment has also allowed us to add an additional math teacher to improve our math scores at the school. So we have some good things going on, and my concern is that repayment of the bill could damage those students' ability to have the benefits that this money has given us, and it's been a great thing for our school.
Okay, thank you. I did want these folks to come up and testify. We did meet before the hearing, because actually Representative Benz had approached me during the floors this morning about Unity and Burnt River. And actually, we will be working with OSBA to have that language taken out, and so on the Senate side. And so it was one of these things of, we could wait for another amendment, but since all of the parties were in agreement that this would be a section that would pretty much just affect some of the very, 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 very small that we met with ODE and so on, and so we'll be working on it on the Senate side. So your trip was worth it.
Thank you.
Because if you would not have contacted Representative Benz, it would not have been brought to our attention. So I appreciate you doing that. Any questions?
Well, since... Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
Since we're on, you know, I mean, people are going to see this maybe outside of this room, it would be important to me to understand what we're doing.
What we're doing?
Yeah, what we're doing, because I don't understand why they were being asked to pay back money. I don't understand what that's about.
Mr. Elliott can explain it.
It would be good for the record.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Michael Elliott for the Oregon State School Fund Coordinator for the Department of Education, for the record. Chair Dory, Representative McClain. In the original bill, one of the later sections, there was what was a discretionary clawback provision where any district that received money as a result of the change in extended ADMW that occurred in 2011, the deputy superintendent had discretion to go to that district and say, you owe us whatever additional money was given, and it would be paid back to the state school fund and redistributed. And if it would, And then there was provisions about how the payment would happen. But and so that's what these two individuals are discussing and saying, that the proposal, as I understand it, to go over to the Senate side, would be to remove that clawback provision. So these districts that started a charter school with no intention of gaming the system or getting this additional money, they started the charter school for other reasons, they would be held harmless. They would not have that money, again, as much as 4 years have gone by, and be required to pay that back. So that's what is hopefully going to happen on the Senate side.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair, Representative McClain, that language appears in Section 4 of the measure, which is on page 4 of
the introduced
bill.
That's the original.
Yes. The introduced measure, okay.
Yes. Thank you. Section 4, page 4.
For the record.
Representative.
I'm really glad she asked.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions? Okay, thank you so very much. We'll fix it on the Senate side.
Thank you.
Sometimes we have a problem with fixing it 2 years from now. But I'm glad you brought it to our attention so we can fix it during this session. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
Okay. Those are the only people we have had signed up for 2150. Anybody else like to talk on 2150? Okay, if not, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2150 and open up a public hearing on and possible, are we going to do a possible work session? Public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3044.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3044 requires public charter schools to obtain written permission, but actually the committee has been asked to consider the dash ones, which would require, actually let me say this. House Bill 3044, as introduced, requires public charter schools to obtain written permission from a district school board if other school district, if the school uses that school district's real property for a testing facility. The committee has been asked to consider the dash ones, which change that permission requirement to a notice requirement to the relevant geographic district where the facility would be located, and to the sponsoring school district of the charter school. Okay. And that's all available on OLIS.
Okay. David Williams from Portland Public, and also Dr. Daniel Holt. And again, we're talking about the Dash 1 amendments. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. David Williams, Portland Public Schools. Excuse me. You recall this is a bill we had a public hearing on about, I think actually precisely a month ago. I looked in the schedule there. And it was originally requires permission for somebody to open up a facility in a non-sponsoring school district. What we felt was closing a loophole in the statute around location of facilities by school districts or charter schools. That you do have the Dash 1 amendments, as the committee staff pointed out, they removed that from a permission to simply a notification. This, we think, is still a step in the right direction. Require notification to both the school district in which you want to locate a facility as well as to your sponsoring school district as well. So notification to both parties that you're opening a facility in a non-sponsoring school district.
For the record, Chair Doherty and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Daniel Hull, Director of Baker Charter Schools. And just for a geographic purpose, we're sponsored in Baker City, but I live in the Portland area and oversee the entire operation. And first of all, I do want to say that I support the current amendment, as I feel that that fits the intention of what we were opening the drop-in centers for. And I guess the only additional request I may have is perhaps a waiver of any fiscal impact for facilities that have already been developed prior to the passage of this law. That would seem to make sense. And then finally, I would say that right now the penalties seem that if we don't follow this current bill, then it goes directly after funding, and that seemed like a bit of a strong consequence for not providing the written notification. So perhaps there could be some kind of tiered system that went in to the amendment instead of just going directly after funding. So that's what I had to say on the current amendment, Dash 1.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, one of the reasons for the Dash 1, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious, is there a way that folks will be notified? Is that part of the packet that will go out to people from ODE to charters that will say you have to notify so that way they avoid being penalized financially so that everybody has a fair shot? And will we hold those folks harmless that already have the charters located or Do they have to go back and notify? What are we going to do about the folks that are already out there?
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, I don't believe that the bill would be retroactive to any existing facilities. This is all speaks to a proactive nature of the notification is required, and it's not even required before you purchase, lease, or own a facility. It's required before students are at that facility. So you could go down the road of finding a place and buying it, negotiating, etc., and then say over the summer before you're going to open in the fall, you would notify the school district in which you're located. As far as how current charter schools would be aware of this, I think much like all of the laws in the books, I think there would be an expectation that they would be aware of changing environment as every legislative session comes out. I think a lot of statute that you all pass trickles back down to school district and charter school level. We all have very robust organizations that help notify us about change in statute that might impact our existing operations.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, I appreciate working on this because this is the one especially to add the sponsoring school and the district where it's located in. And just the idea of if they get a phone call saying, all of these kids are running around doing whatever, what are you going to do? And we say, well, you need to contact somebody else. So that was the purpose. But thank you all very much for working on this. I appreciate it.
If you want to work
that one? If you want to,
they want to.
Okay. You guys want to work it? Okay. So I will close a public hearing on House Bill 3044 and open up a work session on House Bill 3044.
Chair Doherty.
Yes.
Yes. Representative Frederick, do you have a motion?
I have a motion. Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3044 dated March 18th. 2015.
Okay. Representative Frederick moves to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3044 dated March 18th, 2015. Is there any discussion?
Yeah.
Representative Libretto?
Still being new to this process here, mm-hmm. If we adopt these amendments and then the concerns that Daniel Holt had about other possible amendments being made, was your plan to, I mean, I have no problem adopting these, but mm-hmm. was that the end of it, or is there still room for more amendments to the bill?
After on this, what it would be is the amendments would come in on the Senate side if there were other amendments that were going to come through. So, okay. Any other questions? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 3044 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Frederick moves House Bill 3044 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none. Tia, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Hack.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Caluso.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Excused.
Chair Gordy?
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. And do you have somebody like to carry this bill? It's not going to Ways and Means, no. Okay, Representative McClain will carry the bill. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3044. And is that it?
Nope.
We've got one more, and I'll open up a work session on House Bill 2968.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2968 was Representative Wisden's bill. It directs school districts to prepare and file annual reports related to amounts received from the state school fund for students who are in poverty families. It directs the Department of Education to report to the Legislative Assembly on data collected. And the committee has been asked to consider the -1s, which replace the measure, but just rework the measure, contain all the same content. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
And it contains a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue.
Thank you. Representative Frederick?
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2968, dated March 4th, 2015.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2968, dated March 4th, 2015. Is there any discussion? I do want to mention, I talked to Representative Wisnett this morning on the -1 amendments and what would be required of this with the poverty factor, and he was fine with what the bill was, and wanted to know if he wanted to come this afternoon. I said I think that the questions were answered, so just wanted to let you know that. Any other discussion? Okay, is there any objection? But seeing none, dash one amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 2968 to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 2968 to the floor with a do pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Tia, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Pack.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Palooza.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer.
Excused.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. Okay, we are going to be carrying over House Bill for a vote, House Bill 2150. Until we don't know when.
Sure. Rep Springer was absent, too.
Yes, and the reason was Rep Springer was absent, and she was very interested in this bill.
Not
so.
Excuse
us, please. No, that's why we're going to carry it over, and that's it. Anything else? Okay, with that, I adjourn the committee. Anything else? Okay, with that, I adjourn the